It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 43 degrees under overcast skies. Today is Monday, April 28th, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. Before statehood and the advent of scientific management, Southeast Alaska's herring populations were harvested and depleted without much thought for the future. Herring reduction plans were numerous in the region in the early 20th century, but the industry was short-lived. Many believe the herring population in Sitka Sound is now a fraction of what it was in those days and wonder if herring stocks, like salmon, can be restored. KCAW's Emily Foreman reports on a recent grant intended to launch that effort.
Just look at Raven Radio's Facebook page. Photos of active herring spawning in Sitka Sound and hemlock branches coated with eggs are the kind of posts that go viral. It's clear that many more than the 9,000 people that live in Sitka are herring obsessed.
Culturally, it's important, obviously, as a major subsistence resource in the Sitka area, but also very important in trade.
That's Chuck Smythe.
I'm the director of the History and Culture Department at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute.
Smythe says there are places that used to attract herring that don't anymore.
You know, some of the oral histories suggest that herring just sort of stopped coming and moved to another area.
Smythe is working with the Sitka tribe to figure out why they stopped coming and how the population might be restored throughout Southeast. The Alaska Native Fund granted SHI $15,000 to develop a herring restoration plan in the Sitka vicinity. They chose Sitka because it still attracts heaps of herring.
Right now, Sitka has one of the larger herring stocks here in Southeast.
80,000 tons. Jeff Feldpouch is STA's Resource Protection Director.
So if you were looking at transferring eggs to other locations, Sitka would probably have the biomass available as far as herring eggs to be able to do that.
Figuring out exactly how to transplant herring eggs is the tricky part.
You know, I've been told stories about harvesters from other communities who would come over to Sitka and pick up eggs for their community, and on their way home, they would they'd place a few branches in the water in different locations.
Anecdotes like this one will be heavily weighted in the brainstorming process, but a recent study on Pacific herring will serve as the framework. Anthropologist Tom Thornton was the principal investigator for the Herring Synthesis Project. Smythe says it's the most thorough attempt to date at demystifying the Pacific herring. And so why now?
Well, it was just realizing that this significant study had been completed that I came to the realization that it would be good to use that information and try to take it to the next step.
The Herring Synthesis Project combines archaeological, biological, and cultural data. It identifies things like how herring were distributed throughout Southeast, what factors could have changed spawning location, and where herring could thrive, and basically concludes that there are a lot less herring than there used to be.
Probably, you know, before the late 1800s, before there were directed commercial fisheries on them.
Feldpouch says the goal is to return herring to historical levels. Back before commercial sacro fisheries, back before herring were mainly reduced to oil, and back before herring were simply fish for bait. Smythe says he is in the midst of working his way through Thornton's study.
And there's just a lot we don't know about herring.
Like why they left certain areas. There are a lot of factors to consider.
Possibly pollution from logging and pulp mills.
And other industrial activities that may have contaminated the water.
And also, you know, herring are kind of a significant food source for many animals.
Or hatchery salmon released when the herring are most vulnerable. The next step? STA will host a panel discussion of experts in June. Thornton's study will serve as the framework for the discussion, and Feldpouch hopes it will be specific.
One of the things we're going to try to identify is spawning environment that would be conducive to herring populations, and a lot of that will be using traditional knowledge and looking back at where herring used to spawn.
He says the project is a productive step and hopes the end product will be implemented throughout Southeast. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Foreman.
Earlier this month, the Ketchikan School Board adopted new student nutrition and physical activity guidelines, but only after inserting the cupcake clause. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
The nutritional guidelines are part of the federal school lunch program standards, but reach beyond lunch. They include vending machines, concessions, and school activities, including classroom parties and fundraising. Those last two areas raised some concerns and led to a couple of language changes in order to relax the rules a little. One of the issues was selling food at athletic competitions that take place during the school day, such as the recent regional basketball tournament. Many non-students attend those activities and, as board member Stephen Bradford points out, want their snacks during a game.
And I think that we can do that by amending line 263 to add the words, after sold or served, add the words directly to KGBSD students. In other words, they can still operate the concession stand. Old guys like me can still go in and enjoy my popcorn and Coke while I watch the basketball game. We'll just have to put a note up for our own students that says you can't buy anything until 30 minutes after this instructional period is over.
That amendment passed unanimously, as did Bradford's second suggestion, which provides an exception to the healthy food standards for special occasions. Here's a little of the discussion between Board President Michelle O'Brien, Board Member Dave Timmerman, and Bradford.
So the amendment would be to line 297 and 298, traditional or cultural foods may be exempted from the food standards described above for educational or special school or classroom events when offered free of charge. Is there any discussion? Dave?
So does that cover cupcakes?
Well, I believe that a cupcake is, in our culture, is a standard item to be offered at a birthday.
Student board member Evan Wick suggested a third amendment to the guidelines. He notes that the rules prohibit any kind of educational material or school display that includes a name brand of an unhealthy food.
I've brought with me some educational materials. This is my AP World History book. It has a picture of McDonald's in it. The McDonald's would fall under the brands or illustrations of unhealthful foods. If I could draw your attention to another piece, this would be categorized as an illustration. This is in the K-High Commons. It's a mural by Ray Troll. It features a Burger King soda, a fries, and appears to be a cheeseburger, which I do believe probably falls under unhealthful foods.
As the student representative, Wick isn't allowed to make motions, but he asked the school board to consider amending the regulation, adding the words within reason. Board member Trevor Shaw complied, and the amendment passed unanimously.
That was KRBD's Layla Carey. And Tlingit Elder Cyril George Sr. has died at the age of 92. A fisherman, boat builder, master storyteller, and man of great faith, George passed away last week at the Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage. Rosemarie Alexander has more.
Cyril George was of the Deshaton Raven Beaver clan of Angoon and lived in the Admiralty Island community most of his life. Son Richard George recalls his father as a young man to be a successful seiner, halibut, and herring fisherman. He also served his tiny community on the Angoon City Council, as mayor, as a member of the board of directors for Kootsnuwu, Angoon's Village Corporation. He was on Sealaska Regional Corporation's first board of directors in 1972. Richard George remembers his father as a strong man.
He made decisions which always seemed to be the proper decision. That's what I was impressed with when I was young.
Cyril George attended Sheldon Jackson High School and College in the late 1930s, where he became a machinist and learned to build boats. The Presbyterian School was tasked with helping Tlingit shipwright Andrew Hope build the Princeton Hall, a replacement vessel for the church mission fleet.
I wasn't the only one that had this feeling of an enormous undertaking when they started to build this boat. I could weld. I did everything in a machine shop. But I was with him all the way from lining up the motor, the shaft, setting up the electrical.
It took a year to complete the Princeton Hall. Then in 1941, just a few days after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, the boat was to be launched. It had already been conscripted by the U.S. Navy. In this 2007 interview with George on the Princeton Hall, he recalled that all the Sheldon Jackson students trooped down to the harbor to watch the launch.
When the Navy started to tow it away, all the kids were crying. I was crying. I don't think there was anybody that wasn't crying.
After the war, the Princeton Hall was returned to the Presbyterians, and it traveled southeast Alaska waters for years, going village to village. While George helped build it, he'd never been on the boat. Many years later, he had a number of cruises on the Princeton Hall after it was purchased by the late Bill Ruddy. Bill and Kathy Ruddy became close friends with Cyril George, the boat builder, the musician, and Tlingit storyteller. George gradually began to lose his hearing. For several years, Kathy Ruddy was what she describes as a stenographer, typing out conversations for him.
It really helped him to have things written down so he could look over your shoulder and then know what people were saying.
The hearing loss didn't slow him down.
For a guitarist and a really excellent musician, you know, hearing loss is a very poignant thing. And so the fact that he maintained this constant sense of gratitude, you know, even as his hearing was failing, is just a tribute to his character.
As a fluent Tlingit speaker, George liked to teach his language and often went to Tlingit classes at the University of Alaska Southeast, taught by Lance Twitchell.
And Tlingit would tell us, "I just feel wonderful whenever I'm looking upon your faces and you guys are learning our language."
In interviews over the years, Cyril George talked about a battle with alcohol, which he won with prayer and his faith. He became a member of the Salvation Army and was a local commissioned officer known as a sergeant major. Lieutenant Lance Walters of the Salvation Army in Juneau says the Corps uniform was very important to George.
He explained one day that he put it on to remind him of what he came from and that he wasn't going back.
A memorial service is Wednesday at 6 p.m. at Elizabeth Paratovich Hall in Juneau. George will be buried on Killisnoo Island near Rangoon. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's just about 8:01. This is KCAW Sitka. You can listen to or read most Raven News stories again on our website.